Governor Walker's second biennial budget is nearly through the legislative process. The Joint Finance Committee has finished up with their changes, and the State Assembly passed it early yesterday afternoon. Now the State Senate has taken it up, but Republicans in charge have said they want the budget to pass as closely as it is right now. This hour, we bring on two local assembly members to talk about the budget process and what they like and what they don't like about the legislation itself. This is the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm Rich Kramer, and joining me in our Eau Claire studios is Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. She was elected in 2010 and re-elected last November. Kathy Bernier, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here, Rich.
And next, joining us from our Madison studios, I'd like to welcome Democratic State Representative Dana Wachs of Eau Claire. He is a freshman representative who was elected for the first time, thus the freshman, last November. Dana Wachs, welcome to the West Side.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Hi, Dana. Good. How are you?
Good.
Now I'd like to welcome our listeners to take part in this program as well by calling in. Now is your chance to ask direct questions to your elected officials. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. You can also check out the West Side Facebook page. Just search for The West Side and you can post your comments or questions there and we'll get them on the air. Also, if you missed the program or want to listen to it again, check out the West Side Archives by going to WPR.org and search for the West Side on the program, on the list of programs. You'll find us right there. So, Governor Walker's 2014-2015 biennial budget passed pretty much along party lines yesterday in the Assembly, with all Democrats opposing it and nearly all Republicans voting in favor. But there were three Republicans that bucked the trend and voted against their own party, I guess. Kathy Bernier, why do you think that happened?
Well, we have a diverse group of people on our side of the aisle, and I'm not going to speak for them necessarily.
Sure.
Some a lot more conservative than others and have their own reasons. The budget is a huge document with hundreds and thousands, actually, of provisions. And so, we all don't look at it the same way. I look at it, is that budget a glass half full? Or is that a glass half empty? If it's a glass half empty, I would vote against it as well, in my mind. And in their mind, they might have considered it a glass half empty. But I think overall, there are a lot of positive provisions in that budget. And to me, it was a glass half full, and I voted in favor.
And Representative Walks, I've heard read some statements from Democrats who said that this is a broken budget. It's an extreme budget. Do you think that accounts for some of the no votes on the Republican side of the aisle?
Well, it's really hard for me to step into their shoes, except that I do see this as a failed budget. I see this as a budget where we're taking a $700 million one-time surplus and immediately turning it into a $300 million structural deficit. We're adding a new statewide school system with these voucher schools, and we're rejecting comprehensive Medicaid expansion, which would have served our folks greatly. There's a host of things that I don't see eye to eye with on this budget.
Right. We will definitely get into those points bit by bit. First, I want to talk about the tax cuts. This budget will create income taxes. I'm seeing numbers like $651 million. Then a statement that your office, Kathy Bernier, had put out said something like $666 million. And that's a tax cut that supposedly every resident paying in state taxes will be impacted by. Is this, what was the impetus behind this, Kathy Bernier? Is this to spur spending, or is it just to try to cut taxes just for the sake of cutting taxes?
Well, as you know, there's some economic philosophies that if you reduce taxes, you stimulate the economy. Those individuals that save the most will return dollars into the economy, and it will help stimulate it. I think that I have heard from many, many constituents that their taxes are too high, number one. Number two, they want a fairer and flatter tax code. And so this is, really only the beginning of taking a look at our entire tax system in the state of Wisconsin, whether because it is the most convoluted in the country. And so it's the beginning of making our tax code fairer and flatter.
Well, if I can jump in on that one, Rich.
Dana Wachs,
I knew
ahead.
You would.
You know, the way I see this, what we've done in Wisconsin is we've shifted yet again more money to those in the top income brackets. That we had five tax brackets prior to this. With this budget, we're taking away the fifth bracket, and we're flattening the third and fourth tax brackets. So the net result of this is that we're going to have somebody making $28,650 is going to be taxed at the same rate as somebody making $315,000. And basically what that means, about $110 a year for somebody making $50,000 to $60,000 a year, and about $1,440 annually for somebody making $300,000 plus. Now, one of the basic elements here is that there's a presumption by the Republicans that by shifting more money to the top, there's going to be job creation. We see it a different way. We see it as economies are not surplus-driven economies. Economies are purchasing their demand-driven economies. So if we get more money into the middle class, our philosophy is, and I believe, that that will stimulate the economy. And I think one of the problems with our economy in this state right now is that functionally with Act 10, there was a substantial blow to the middle class. Many members of the middle class suddenly had a $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 hole in their economic budget due to bills and demands that they hadn't seen coming. And I think that's one of the reasons that Wisconsin is near the bottom of the ranks in job growth. We're 44th, and wage growth, we're 45th, and we're actually dead last in terms of short-term job growth. And so, I mean, there's two different philosophies going on here. I believe that economies are demand-driven. I think they believe that it's supply-driven. And I think that is really the reason that we see tax issues differently. I believe we're correct.
Kathy,
yeah, I just wanted to correct, Dana, that top tax bracket that was created in the 2009-10 Doyle budget, that remains the same. That was cut a little bit from 7.5% to 7.25%, but that's still there, Dana. The three middle brackets were consolidated. But in my mind, they all were cut slightly. But those middle brackets are middle class, and the individuals who are around $20,000 or $25,000 a year, especially with one child or two children, the earned income tax credit more than makes up. They really won't pay more taxes. They will still get that earned income tax credit, and if they have any deductions whatsoever, they won't feel those taxes at all.
Dana Wachs, any response? Or?
Well, I disagree. I think that this again favors those in the top brackets. And those are the folks that aren't going to be out buying a new refrigerator. Those are the folks that are going to take their money and put it into a certificate of deposit or some kind of investment vehicle rather than putting it back into our economy. And I think if you take a look at, for instance, the German economy, they have most of their benefits go to the middle class, and they have the strongest, most vibrant economy in the world because they have buying power. Basically, you're not going to be building a new factory. You're not going to be building a new industry where there isn't any demand. So if to stimulate demand is, I believe, the key to success.
Now, Kathy Bernier, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, I saw this chart. And you mentioned that this is making the tax system in Wisconsin a little bit more fair than it used to be. A person making less than $50,000 would see about $45 in savings each year, while a person making $300,000 or more would get about $1,400 in tax cuts. Explain that. How is that fair? I mean, I don't understand.
The more that you make, the more you pay. Mm-hmm. If 10% of $1,000 is good to tithe for your church, but 10% of $100,000 I mean, the percent, you're still paying more by percentage.
Right.
And so that's why it's fair. The
but
less
the
you make.
Percentages are the same
yeah,
all the way up the line.
The less you make, the less you pay. The more you make, the more you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do have somewhat of a progressive tax code as it is, and we sort of kept that. That is why the top tax bracket over $300,000, theirs is 7.25% compared to the 6.675%, I think it is. Anyway, I can't remember the numbers right off the top of my head. So it is still progressive, but the middle class, they want to take more of the burden because in the state of Wisconsin, the Fiscal Bureau will also show you where the bulk of those taxes were being paid for by those individuals anyway.
You know, one other aspect of this, as I understand it, the other day we had Mr. Lang, Bob Lang, came into our caucus and talked about this budget in relationship to the taxes and the like. And, you know, at one point we asked him, well, what is this doing for in terms of property tax? And he, a couple of different times, indicated that the net result of this budget will actually increase property taxes. And that's coming from Bob Lang. He's the director of the Fiscal Bureau, which is a nonpartisan.
Did he explain how?
Bureau. Well, I think what it is, I mean, the bottom line is, and we're going to drift into other areas of this budget probably with this answer, but if you expand, you basically start another school system statewide, that is going to add to these obligations.
And with that, I think that's a good segue. I was going to go to voucher schools next. First, I want to let people at home know that, or in the car, that they can call in and take part in this discussion. We're talking about the state biennial budget. We've got two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin on the program, and we're speaking with Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier and Democratic State Representative Dana Wachs of Eau Claire. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Our phone lines are wide open, and you can also post on Facebook if you've got a question or a comment and just can't make it to the phone. With that, voucher schools, I think, just about got the most press of anything, the voucher school program, the expansion. And it's perhaps one of the most controversial parts is the expansion statewide of the voucher school program. Under this measure, 500 kids across the state whose parents have income levels at around 185% of the federal poverty level in 2014, 500 kids from those families could participate. In 2015, it looks like 1,000 kids could participate. There's some concern among Democrats that it could be expanded in the, or even beyond that. But what makes this so controversial, Kathy Bernier? Why is this such a hot issue?
Well, and I've told all the school districts that I've met with that I've always been in favor of choices for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for me, it's not for the school, it's not for the teacher or the principals, it's our children. We are responsible to educate our citizenry. By constitution, we have to provide an education to our children in the state of Wisconsin. Now, you know and I know that there are certain children that I went to school with, including my own family, that had some educational difficulties. And there were no options for them, or very few options. And so school choice is a way of providing options to parents and children that are struggling within a particular school. It's not, in my mind, it's not an attack on that school. Most of our schools here do a very fine job, and some have alternative education opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be fine in a certain school district or in a certain school, and that's good. And I believe that most of us will send our children to the public school system in our neighborhood because, for the most part, they're good. But what do you do with a child? What do you do for a parent who is just at their wits' end to help educate their child, and they have no options? None. And I found myself in that position with my second child, who when you have a child who has attention deficit and or with hyperactivity, they have a different learning style that some educational situations don't adapt to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I begged to have this child put into an alternate school, and I was told, no, we don't want him there. And so that is my perspective. I think that a parent knows when the child needs a different educational opportunity, and this is a way to provide that to parents who are frustrated with their current school, that their children are being left behind. And so I think that we have to have options. And yes, it may be two different. It may be three different because we have parochial schools. But that money, in my mind, belongs to that kid. That child deserves an education in whatever way, shape, or form that we can provide it. And that is what truly, to me, is No Child Left Behind.
And Dana Walks, you've mentioned, and a lot of the Democrats, even Tony Evers has mentioned, that this is the creation of a second public school system. Well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with those options, having those parents having that option to take a kid that might not be succeeding in public schools to a different venue?
Well, I think that in end, what you're doing is diluting precious public resources. And I think it's, in my opinion, it's not proper for there to be public support of private parochial schools. And what you're doing is, you know, functionally this budget will increase about $90 million for private voucher schools, which is about a 29% increase in total funding. There's about 25,000 kids in these voucher programs. So as I understand it, as I remember the numbers, this will be about a $700 or $800 increase per student for K through 8, and about a $1,400 increase per student for high school students within the private system. Whereas, if you take a look at what we're doing with the public system, we're increasing it about $75 per pupil per year in the biennium. But
150.
Yeah, it's 150 for the biennium, but
no, 150 each year.
And what this amounts to is about a 1.4% increase in spending on our public schools. Now the problem with this is that, for instance, in February, the inflation rate was about 2%. In March it was 1.5%. In April it was about 1.1%. So we're not even keeping up with inflation with our public schools, and this comes on the heels of about a $1.6 billion cut in the last biennium. So I think it's doing two things. It's A, diluting our precious taxpayer dollars. B, it's showing favoritism to a new statewide private school system, and I think that's not beneficial.
And with that, representatives, let's take our first call. It's on this topic, and we're going to go to Jean in Eau Claire. And Jean, you're on the West Side. Thanks for calling in.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have really strong concerns here about this public financing of private institutions in which I have no ability to visit with school board members, to ask questions of what's going on in the school system, even though I don't have children. And I feel that I should not be paying for private education. In addition, I have concerns because there have been more restrictions and requirements put on teachers and less requirements on private schools. Let's look at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, private and public, lost millions of dollars with no oversight. So as a Republican, I want to know, you know, where's the oversight, and why are you needlessly spending my taxpayer dollars?
Gene, thanks for the question. I guess I'll put that to Kathy Bernier. And a reminder, the call-in number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. That's a big argument among people that are opponents of the charter schools and the voucher program is the lack of accountability. Kathy Bernier, what's your response?
That, too, is currently addressed in the budget. There will be additional accountability for voucher schools in addition to testing and certification through the Department of Public Instruction for the school choice schools. So that's already in there. The other point is the Supreme Court has already ruled that these school choice schools, no matter where they are and whether they're parochial or whatever, is constitutional. So that's, you know, the constitutional argument's off the table. Mm-hmm. The other point is that the funding for these students that are going to a school choice, the funding is actually reduced from what it costs at a public school. So they're getting about two-thirds of what the actual cost is. In some cases, in certain school districts, even a lot less than that. So they're only going to get $7,200 K-8 and $7,856, whereas many of the local schools are well over $10,000 per student. If we put, even in the Milwaukee public school system, if we put everyone back into the Milwaukee public school system, the overall pot of money would shrink drastically for the rest of the state, and it would hurt our schools up here in the Chippewa Valley. So that that wouldn't be a good idea. But once again, I am an advocate for what is ever best, what is best for that student to get them an education so they're a productive citizen and that they are employable when they grow up. And that's our goal.
And Representative Walks, what's your take on the accountability, the question or the concern among some people that are opposed to these schools?
Well, I think that they haven't been accountable up to this point at all. And basically what we were looking to do, what we'd like to see basically is oversight over where are these public dollars going within these private schools. We'd like to see exactly what's being done with those dollars. And in terms of the disparity of the disparity between the public and the private schools, it's true that there's more money going per student into the public schools, but the public schools have a much greater burden. They are taking care of they take all comers at the public schools are given an education per our constitutional requirement. And, you know, what are the rest of the costs of a degradation of the public school system? What are the total costs? I would like to point out the first thing that happens when somebody is thinking about moving a business to like Eau Claire, or let's say when you're out recruiting a new physician or an attorney, the first question that comes out of their mouth when you're interviewing them is, you know, what are your public schools like? That's, well, that may be the second question. The first one is probably how much are you going to pay me? But the second one is, you know, what is your educational system like? So what are the untoward costs of a degradation of the public school system? I think it's pretty dramatic. I mean, we need to have the highest and most well-trained workers, the highest and most well-trained people in our society. We need to attract business to Wisconsin. We need to have a better way of life. And I think that we'll have a significant erosion of that with the degradation of the public school system.
Well, I'm meaning to change subject here in just a bit. We've got three callers that have vouchers on their mind. We'll take one more call on the issue, and then we will take a break and move on. Let's go to Deborah, who is on the road. Deborah, thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my phone call. I guess my question is, with voucher schools, they actually have the option or choice to not accept students. So when you're speaking about being able to send your child to a school to meet their educational needs, oftentimes, those educational needs are declined, and I'd like to know what your speakers have to say about that.
Sure. Thank you very much, Deborah. What about that? She's basically reiterating the point that Dana Wachs just made, that that they don't have to take all people. Is that a concern of yours?
Some of the choice schools do. You know, there are certain individuals, and it depends on what the needs are, that they may not be equipped to. And I know that we had talked about some of the grants available for special needs children.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually in the budget and taken out. But they do cost more. Even the public schools are given more funding for the special needs child. And so, you know, it is a challenge, and I will be the first to admit that is a challenge. And from what I understand, and up here, we don't have as much, you know, firsthand experience with that as they do in Milwaukee. But I know that is a challenge. If you have a special needs child, more severe than, say, someone who's attention deficit or mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But I know that we have some great alternative schools here. I know that Eau Claire has one through the CVTC. I know Altoona, Augusta has one out at the Beaver Creek Reserve. Chippewa has one at the alternate school. And I know that we are not experiencing in our community the degradation of our education system as they do in some other areas of the state. And so I don't want to be incredibly selfish in regard to, well, we're doing fine here, so we don't want any other schools in other parts of the state that are not doing well, the inability to have options. So it's a balancing act when you're making a decision that affects other areas of the state and not your own.
Well, I would agree. And did I cut you off, Kathy? I'm sorry.
No, you go right ahead.
You go ahead, and we're up against a break.
I would agree in the sense that in the Chippewa Valley, things have been going much better. We don't need a second school system here, a private voucher school system. We just flat out don't need it, and I think it's a distraction. It'll take us off point and not adequately provide. But there's a difference between charter schools and these private voucher schools, and we really don't have voucher schools here, and I think that's a good thing. I really am against the statewide expansion of this.
All right. With that, we're talking about the state biennial budget, the second of the Walker administration that's now worked its way through the Joint Finance Committee and through the State Assembly just as of yesterday afternoon. Now it's in the Senate's hands, but right now we're talking with two State Assembly members from Western Wisconsin to get their take on the budget. You can call in at 800-228-5615. We had a lot of people talking about or wondering about the voucher program. We're going to move on because there's so much more to this budget than that. But do stay tuned. This is the West Side. We'll be back just after a short break. Welcome back. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by two state representatives from Western Wisconsin, from the Chippewa Valley, no less. We are joined by Democratic State Representative Dana Wachs of Eau Claire and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. We're talking about the state biennial budget, which is almost finished, almost through the legislative process, almost heading towards Governor Walker's desk. We're asking these representatives what they like about it and what they don't. And we're also asking you the same thing. We want you to call in with your comments or questions about the state biennial budget. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. Still have a good chunk of time with the representatives. And again, thank you both for coming. Next, another hot issue that was in the press a whole lot. This is healthcare, Medicaid expansion. This budget includes Governor Walker's rejection of federal money to expand Medicare. And along with that, it moves around 90,000 people from the state's Badger Care Plus program into a federally designed insurance marketplace that is still yet to be set up. Dana Wachs, I'll start with you. What's your take on this? Is this in the state's best interest, or is this a political show of force against the Obama administration?
Well, I think that's exactly what it is a political show somebody's running for president, and he wants to make sure that he can demonstrate that he's being a stiff-arm conservative. And the problem is that the system that he's setting up is going to cost Wisconsin about $120 million more than accepting that Medicaid expansion. And it'll insure about 85,000 fewer people on Badger Care. Additionally, the governor is or this budget is proposing that hospitals be provided about $73.5 million to cover the cost of treating uninsured patients. You see, one of the problems with this system is that you go to places like Los Angeles and other states and now soon Wisconsin, and you see lines of uninsured people standing, and they end up going to the emergency room for problems that could have been solved very easily had they been treated earlier. They show up at the emergency room, and the cost of treating them when the problems have increased to a serious nature, the costs skyrocket. And so this is, once again, another myopic or nearsighted proposal in this budget that's going to cost us in a lot of ways, not to mention the human suffering component of this. Over the years, I practiced law also in addition to being in the legislature, and I've practiced for 27 years. And over the course of that 27 years, I have seen numerous people whose lives have been turned upside down, primarily because they didn't have enough insurance or any insurance at all. The human suffering component of this accounts for a lot as well. And I think this is a very nearsighted proposal. And tacitly, he's admitting that there's going to be a lot of people left in the lurch when they're earmarking about $73.5 million directly to hospitals to cover the cost of treating people who will now be uninsured.
Kathy Bernier, do you agree with that? Is that a tacit admission by the administration or by the Republicans? And also, how is this in the best interest of the state?
Well, Rich, we started out what things in the budget do you agree with and what things don't you? I'm in the middle on this as far as my suggestion with my budget buddy, and I don't know if you know how we have it set up, but we have budget buddies, and then we mm-hmm. make our suggestions. And I had an amendment. I had a couple of amendments, one of which went through, the other one didn't, not exactly how I wanted. I had suggested in my meetings that we take it just through the transition period and then phase it out. Now, as you know, that we've heard in the news all over the place that low-income individuals oftentimes making minimum wage or whatever have up to $50,000 worth of government benefits. Mm-hmm. And so it discourages them from getting a new job, climbing the ladder, and that sort of thing. And so that is where the farsightedness comes in. You can take it now and have less responsibility for individuals because they'll be fully covered by Badger Care, or we can, and we still get federal dollars in, a lot of them, because the individuals, we have 98,800 childless adults that under the poverty level that will now be eligible for Badger Care that never were. So we had a lot of elderly people, 60 before Medicare coverage or Medicare, and young people who had absolutely no coverage. And they're the ones that went completely untreated and ended up in the emergency room. So they're going to be covered. There is absolutely, in my mind, no reason why anyone should go uncovered. $24 a month, $6 a week for an individual between 100 and 133% of poverty level, and that includes dental click care and eye click care. Usually those individuals are eligible for food share. They're eligible for heating assistance, daycare assistance, and a number of other assistance, but they will have to set aside $24 a month for their health insurance to cover their family. And I think that would be the responsible thing to do. And so our hope is that these individuals do that. They realize that health care is very important and that they have to budget $24 a month. And, And so even though I prefer that we would have preferred that we take the federal money and gradually move out, this was the decision that I had a little angst about, but understand the philosophy behind it. And then everyone should be covered, single individuals and those between 100% and on up for through the exchanges.
We've got a caller that's interested in this issue again. So we'll go to the phones now. And I heard that Dana Wachs, you were trying to chime in there. We'll give you a chance.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be cutting in.
Sorry. That's all right. It's
no,
all right. Downing, we go to Downing, and this is Jody. Jody, you're on the line. Thanks so much. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a self-employed person that pays my major medical insurance, and I know a lot of people on BadgerCare, and that lift up is what allows them to, you know, work hard and stay in the workplace. And I don't understand this $24 a month deal. I haven't seen that anywhere. So I'd like that explained to me.
Kathy Bernier?
It's part of the Affordability Care Act that...
And when is that going to happen?
Well, it is supposed to be up and running January 1. October, the programs, the exchanges are supposed to be set up. Now, bear
and
in
is
mind...
Is it federal?
It's federal.
Yeah, it's the federal...
Because they turned the money back from the federal government.
This is part of the Affordable Care Act, is what she's saying.
But the federal government has still the responsibility to subsidize that health insurance premium for the individuals who are not on Medicare, are not on BadgerCare. So when that premium for a family of three is, let's say, $2,000 a month, then they pay $24, and the federal government has to subsidize the rest of that premium. That is the Affordability Care Act, and so that's where I get those dollars, which, by the way, in some instances will be less than what a lot of our individuals are paying for BadgerCare right now. I know that you're some of them at 160% are paying about $78 a month. So it's graduated. The more you make, the less it's subsidized. So that's where I get those figures.
Well...
All right. I can just say that I know a lot of people that this is going to really affect, and I think that is going to affect our economy and our recovery. You know, we're already, 44th or 48th in recovery from Governor Walker's policies, and now you drop this on top of it.
Well, when I was doing doors, I had people on BadgerCare that were paying. Some of them told me, more than one, I think three people told me that they could pay more and that they could have a bigger copay. I mean, I had individuals on BadgerCare that told me that they would be willing to pay more. And so that's how the exchanges are supposed to work.
Jody, thank you so much for the question. Dana Wachs, go ahead.
Number one, Governor Walker refused to cooperate in the establishment of exchanges, which would have streamlined this project very much. Number two, Kathy Bernier and I agree that he should have taken the federal money because that would have been a one fix, one for one and all methodology here. Now we've got a patchwork of systems, whereas we could have had it fixed in one fall swoop without any detriment to the taxpayers in Wisconsin. But I do agree very much with the caller in many respects, all respects basically. The functional reality is that the effect of this on people and their lives is dramatic. I recently had one of my clients, a former client of mine, who actually appeared at some press conferences on this issue, where when their child turned 18, the family was taken off of BadgerCare. And shortly after they were taken off BadgerCare, mom came down with diabetes. And shortly after that, she had to have one of her legs amputated. And the family, they were family farmers. They'd worked their whole lives building their farm. And they had to sell their farm in order to pay $175,000 in medical bills for the amputation of her leg. Then, terribly, a few months after that, after the husband went to work on the farm he used to own. He went to work as an hourly employee. He was in a terrible car accident and rendered a paraplegic. So we ended up with two people whose lives were ruined, and in many respects, all of it harkens back to the fact that they didn't have adequate health care. And, I mean, the human toll that a decision like this makes is absolutely horrible. And it's inexcusable, frankly, not to take that money.
We're talking about the state biennial budget on the west side during this hour. We're getting close to the top of the hour, so we're going to take our final break. We've got two callers on the line. We'll try to get to them when we return. And also, we're going to get into some of the I want to talk about some of the issues that are policy-oriented versus spending. They're also pretty hot in the press. And we'll hear more from Democratic State Representative Dana Wachs and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. This is The West Side. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the state biennial budget. We've got two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin on the program, Kathy Bernier, a Republican from Chippewa Falls in the Assembly, and Dana Wachs, a Democrat from Eau Claire, also in the Assembly. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We're getting close to the top of the hour, so we might not get to your call, but do give it a shot anyway. It's worth it. Also, if you've missed part of the program and would like to listen to again, the number or the website to check out the online archives is WPR.org, and then click on the West Side link. You'll find just hundreds of archives, years of worth of program, with myself as host, also as with Mary Jo Wagner, the host that preceded me. So with that said, let's go straight to the call, the phones. We've got one person that's been holding a while, and it's not quite budget-related, but since he's been such a good sport and been on the phone for quite a long time, we're going to go to Gary in Eau Claire. Gary, what's your question? Gary, you're on the air. And we're going to drop Gary. Sorry about that. Let's go now to Jennifer in Eau Claire, and this is a question about college student fees. You're on the air, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My name is Jennifer, and I work with students in student government.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a small provision in the budget that that takes away the students' right to it's one sentence, and it takes away their right to make modifications to their allocable fees, which doesn't impact taxes of the state at all. And as you know, Wisconsin Chapter 36095 gives students the primary right to govern themselves, and this one sentence takes away their right to make additions to their own self-taxation.
Is this got something?
Why it's in there?
Is this this is about the student council or the United Council?
No, it's not about the United Council. It's in a different paragraph, and it says that students, the allocable fees are frozen to the 2012-13 level. It's just one sentence, which takes away the student's right to use their own governance power. And I'm just curious about why that's in the bill.
Sure. Kathy Bernier, are you familiar with
this? I believe they froze that along with tuition fees frozen to bring some relief to the individuals. Tuition at the UWs right now. The UW has a significant surplus, but I know that student fees helped build Davie Center, and if you have that in place now, that is still available to the universities, but they just have frozen it so that it can't continue to expand.
Dana Wachs?
Well, that's what I'm curious about. I mean, the students have the right to tax themselves, and this takes that away for the next 2 years. So it's completely separate from tuition.
Gotcha.
I agree with the caller, frankly. I think this is yet another, you know, basically the way I see this is there's an attempt to dissuade people from uniting for things, advocating for things, and this is yet another example of that. I mean, these segregated funds or these fees have been instrumental in building things like the new Davie Center. And this United Council has been a very effective student government group that really represents the students, and they're the ones that are paying this tuition, and it represents their interests. And that's true. This budget significantly curtails, nearly obliterates ability of students to think collectively and think together and basically have policy and directive over their fees. So there's a lot of this in this budget. There's like another aspect of that in some respects. Municipalities are now to take fees generated and payments in lieu of tax generations and offset that against the municipal levy. Well, there's another. It's almost a mean-spirited aspect of this budget, as were those student provisions. I don't know why anybody – how are we to run government? And how are people to direct their fees and direct their services? This is a democracy. Why are these things in this budget? I completely agree with the caller.
And Kathy Bernier, there are, as far as local government is concerned, I'm not so sure about what the caller Jennifer was talking about. I guess that slipped by me. But
I didn't have anyone contact me, any students contact me on that at all.
With regards to local government, there seems to be a lot of things in the state budget that is kind of taking the control over certain things like residency requirements and then the Milwaukee County Board pay, and there's all kinds of other things. We hear about a lot of people that are conservatives or Tea Party saying that, you know, the less centralized power in government, the better. The more local control, the better. This seems to butt against that.
Well, you happen to hit on the amendment that I proposed to the Joint Finance Committee to remove the residency requirement. And I know that's been a battle in the southern part of the state. But I did have a motion to remove the residency. That, to me, was purely – that is really a local control issue in my mind, having been village board member. So I was not successful. There were a few changes made, not to my liking. I didn't like that provision at all. So for the most part, I do believe as much as possible to keep, your government as local as you can, with the exception, with the county board. I made it, when anyone asked me, counties are an arm of the state. They are in the Constitution to be controlled by the state legislature. So when we made those changes to Milwaukee County, that was realistically and constitutionally our responsibility to do it. So I didn't have a problem with that, but I did with that residency requirement.
No, I remember you've been on the program a few times, Kathy, and I remember a comment that you made about Act 10 on a previous program, and we're not even going to get into Act 10.
We don't
have time.
That's enough.
But you said that while you supported what the bill was about and what it did for pension and health insurance payments and how it saved money and whatever, but you didn't like the way it was passed. I'm wondering, with that kind of in mind, how did you feel about the Joint Finance Committee adding a lot of policy items in the overnight hours?
Every administration does this, and the Doyle administration did it time and time again. And last time, to be truthfully, we didn't have as much policy in the last budget as this one. A lot more policy in this one, and I don't. A lot of that I would prefer having a separate bill and hammering it out, and that is. My opinion, and I know what happens. The earmarks, for example. There's a lot of earmarks. One can say, well, we hate these earmarks, but when you look at them, it's the Boys and Girls Club, it's the veterans, a whole list of really worthy causes. So, I'm torn about that. I'd prefer a number of them arguing the merits of the policy on the legislative floor. But like I said, this is a massive undertaking. This budget is huge, and, you're not going to be happy with 100%.
Dana Walks.
I have to say that, the Democrats, we went around the state and we talked to people about this budget. We tried to get input from people. Rather than doing things in the middle of the night, legislatures and governors need to be doing this stuff in the light of day with input from people, and that's what we tried to do. The Finance Committee only met had meetings in areas of the state representing about 2% of the population. Mm. We fanned out all over the state having hearings, and it was so good to hear from people what their thoughts and what they thought was important in this budget. And it's just a shame that here we are, it was about 4 or 5 in the morning, that all sorts of substantive amendments are thrown into this budget that really didn't belong there.
Representative Wax, I want to finish with a question for you. I heard that Democrats had about 200 amendments to go into this budget. Why didn't you offer any? It seemed like the party's been accused of kind of giving up and going home.
We haven't given up. What we did, and as you know, yesterday we found out all over the state to talk to people and ask them to call the Republican senators and ask that this budget be stopped. We had 211 amendments that we carefully worked on for a long period of time. But the problem was that Tuesday, Mr. Voss came into our caucus and told us that the Republicans wouldn't hear any of it. And we were down to one day left in the budget consideration period. And the question was, what was the best use of our time? If they're not even going to listen, why would we stand there and ask and argue our case when they're not going to listen? We felt the best tactic is to fan out and ask the people to call their state senators, and particularly the Republican state senators, to try to halt this budget.
I think there's more to that story too, Rich.
If we had more time, we'd get into it. Both of you, Democratic State Representative Dana Wax, Eau Claire, Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier, thank you both so much for your time. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Jim Oliver, for handling the phones, Hillary Crizan for promotions. Get well, Hillary. Dean Collenbeck and Tiffany Coggins for keeping it all in order. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.